Did you know you could sponsor Nerd and Tie? That's right, for just $20, we'd say your name here, or something nice about you, or just something general in your vicinity and stuff. That's right, just go to nerdandtie.com, click on the sponsor information, and send us a bit our way, and we'll send you a bit your way and stuff. Also, you can contribute to our legal fund at gofundme.com/nerdandtie. Because that's also a thing you can do, and the world is amazing, and so are you, and we believe in you. Totally. Except for the people we don't.
On this Fortnite's edition of Nerd and Tie, we honor Harlan Ellison after his passing, we try to wrap our heads around the insanity that was TanaCon, and we try to put together what an American Revolution anime would look like. All that in the mailbag on this Fortnite's Nerd and Tie.
Woohoo!
Aw, yeah. Bringing it back to the people. Because
the American people, except for the ones who aren't in America.
You know, our listeners in other countries. I'm sure we have, like, two.
Keith Shizu.
Mm-hmm. See?
And Vink.
Yeah, there's
our two. Yeah, list. See, I did that on purpose.
Yeah.
We are here. We are ready. It is a lovely Tuesday in the entirely too warm Midwest. I am one of your hosts, the unstoppably Nick-like Nick Izumi. Joining me today... ready to right all that is wrong, the heroic Trey Dorn.
When I'm in the studio and my door is closed, I'm cut off from all air conditioning in my home.
And able to leap tall buildings with the help of a man-up forklift and a trebuchet, the one and only Gen.
Oh, come on, I'm 5 foot half an inch. There's that extra half an inch there. Not just 5 feet.
You are, wow. You know, you're the same height. You're a half an inch taller than my father-in-law.
That's weird.
Tiny man.
I'm not used to being taller than people at all, so it weirds me out when I am.
Again, are you like, sometimes I wonder, I just assume... From your height, I first thought that your love of Tolkien was because he told the stories of your people, the halflings.
Pretty much. No lie. Like, I come from a family of, like, short and stout people, and we love food. Like.
Ken is the closest person I've ever met to a real halfling. It's true.
I just have the tiniest feet of any hobbit you've ever met.
For some video for either this show or other projects that we three creators work on, we really need to get a video of Gen, like, with a waistcoat running through a little village yelling, I'm going on an adventure. I want this.
Well, one of my dream cosplays is to do, like, a movie-perfect Samwise Gamgee. So...
Oh my god. I support this 100%. I support this 110%.
Because I want to have a little box in my backpack, in my rucksack, as Sam. And inside that little box is going to be some dirt. And in that dirt is going to be a little seed, which is the last melon tree seed that Galadriel gives him when he leaves Lothlorien. Ah! I'm very excited.
You know, after all that happy, it makes me sad to move on to our next topic, but we probably should get the sads out of the way first.
Yeah.
It is, we're really sad to, it's no doubt been reported already up and down before, but this last week, sci-fi legend, I feel, even calling him a legend feels like I'm underselling him. The great Harlan Ellison has passed away.
Yeah.
Ellison, of course, wrote countless bits of fiction, some some of the best episodes of Star Trek, such as City on the Edge of Forever, and also made some very inspiring videos, at least for me, about why it's important to pay the artist.
My first exposure to Harlan Ellison, the person, not his writings, my first exposure would be, you know, episodes of Star Trek.
But right.
Sit in the Edge of Forever is pretty much my first exposure to him. But my first exposure to him, the person, was early on in Sci-Fi Channel's existence in, like, 93, 92. There was this show called Sci-Fi Buzz, and they literally would often end the show with a five-minute rant from Harlan Ellison. Just Harlan Ellison on camera complaining about something. And that is...
I think I saw that show a couple times.
It won a Cable Ace. when those were things. Cable Ace Awards, because you won't give us Emmys. Harlan. I mean, Harlan Ellison is just a legend, and I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream is, like, such a important piece of fiction. It's also one of the two things. Also, the end theme for the show, which everyone makes fun of the sound, the alarm, and it is a song from a rock opera that is a mashup of I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream and Harry Potter. That was written by Vomit Hat Steve. Not kidding. And that it's when you hear I sing the sound, the alarms on that. But when you hear whenever the verses come up at the end of the show, like if you hear that, that is the voice of Vomit Hat Steve. But that rock opera is partially based on I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream.
Crazy.
And so like Harlan Ellison, his influence is so huge. And it's just, you know.
So I have the most bizarre favorite thing about Harlan Ellison. And I freely admit this is a very strange thing to look back on someone fondly about. But I will never forget it. I have in my collection of random nerd books, I have a collection of Doctor Who novelizations. And the introduction to this collection of Doctor Who novelizations was written by Harlan Ellison. And in this introduction, he goes on to decry pretty much every major American sci-fi series, Star Trek included, and to say that Doctor Who was a better show. It's very strange.
Not that he had massive hard feelings towards Star Trek.
Fair. It's just I couldn't not find that delightful and bizarre.
Dude.
No, I get it.
I don't know. It's again, you have any thoughts on Harlan Ellison?
I mean,
I don't know if you've ever read his stuff or.
Oh, I'm sure that something I've encountered has probably been influenced by him. Like, he was so huge.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're like me and you didn't, like, read his work, like, directly, something you did read, something you did encounter. Like, I was, original Star Trek.
Yeah, City on the Edge of Forever is
right.
Classic episode.
One of the best.
Even if they did remove the entire storyline about McCoy being addicted to drugs. That was an
yeah.
Harlan's version was darker than what ended up on screen. And that was a pretty dark episode.
I was about to say, which is saying something, because that is a pretty dark episode on its own, honestly. But
that is, we can't save this woman because we have to stop the Nazis. I mean, wow.
Amend that. We can't save this pacifist because we have to stop the Nazis.
Yeah.
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 It's a really good episode, you guys. Profoundly upsetting, but everything that good science fiction should be.
Yes. Speaking of profoundly upsetting.
Yeah, well, we've said our piece. Unfortunately, now we have to talk about terrible things again. A different kind of terrible.
It's at least terrible things, but nobody died.
Okay, that's fair. Just a little bit ago, there was a, VidCon is, of course, a popular event, that a lot of people who make videos on YouTube all go to, once a year. But one particular YouTuber, Tana Mongu, is it Mongu?
Tana Mongo.
Mongo, excuse, pardon me, I really...
I
was
only...
so ready for the story and I forgot to learn to pronounce her name. One particular YouTuber, Tana Mongo, announced that she would not be attending VidCon because instead she would be running her own convention. Was it literally across the street?
It was a couple blocks away.
Down the street from VidCon that she was calling TanaCon. That's right, TanaCon. And what followed might be the biggest flaming pile of poo in the convention scene this entire year.
Yeah, if someone was ever going to make the DashCon organizers look competent, it was...
It might have happened.
It was Tana Mongo and the company Good Times Live that ran this. It's either Good Times Live or Good Times Entertainment, depending on where you look at it written down. It's pretty much one guy, this Michael Weist. It's pretty much him as like a person. God, so where'd even begin?
Well, clearly they're a good group to go to. They're offering good times. I can always use a good time. That's just...
All right.
I need more fun in my life.
All right, so TanaCon. So this took place... right now we're releasing this episode on July 4th. This took place about a week and a half ago. And it's... This was, like, literally the weekend of crapfest conventions. Like, TanaCon managed to pull out ahead after, like, SoonerCon in Oklahoma had a whole, like issues with vendors being demanded that they pay estimated sales tax, and Fandemic Sacramento's Fandemic was, like, hardly anybody showed up for it. In Cottage Country Con in Orilla, Ontario did not, like, have anybody show up either. But TanaCon somehow managed to royally screw this up in so many ways. So it was a spite con set down the street from VidCon because she gotten pretty much, like, booted from VidCon. Tana Mongo had, as far as I can tell, she says she was banned from VidCon. VidCon's a pretty big deal. It draws in 30,000 attendees. It was originally started by the brothers, the Green, you know.
The Vlog Brothers.
Yeah. John
Hank
Green
and John Green.
Yeah. I was taking a breath, but yes.
Okay.
And although
I'm
Viacom...
I'm sorry. I'm mistaken for them so often that I have to know who they are.
You've changed your hair color. It'll be better now.
I've changed my hair color and hairstyle, so it doesn't happen very often anymore, but you know.
Yeah, it's... But Viacom bought the convention... This is Viacom's first year being in charge of it. But TanaCon, because she started this, is kind of like this SpiteCon down the street. They booked a whole bunch of big names like Shane Dawson, who doesn't hardly ever do conventions anymore, but Bella Thorne, Casey Neistat. Tickets are sold online in two tiers, a free pass, which actually cost $1, and a $65 VIP pass. According to Mongo and Good Times, so actually we looked this up, new information has come out in the past couple of days, that the number of VIP tickets sold were just over 5,000. And that's the $65 VIP tickets, and then a couple hundred of the free tickets were sold. Most of the people who bought tickets to this spent $65 on their ticket. And that VIP ticket was supposed to come with a gift bag and, you know, was supposed to, you know, give them access to exclusive meet and greets. What happened was, on the day of the convention, these 5,000 people, give or take, 5,000, though, is the approximate number, descended on the hotel. And they were lined up in a parking lot in the hot Southern California sun in Anaheim, California, and stood in the parking lot for hours. You see, the hotel that this was being held on, the Marriott's actual capacity was around 1,100. There were over 5,000 tickets sold. You can do some math here and understand that while a first chunk of people get into the building, people were left waiting outside until people came out. And that meant that there were most of these people, some of them stayed in that line for 8 hours, some of them for 4 hours. There was no water supplied to this line. There was no shade. The people got sunburned. And needless to say, after a while, people got pretty rowdy. And so that's not great.
Classy.
And those gift bags that they were getting were pretty much had a branded condom in it, like a phone holder and a rubber wristband and maybe some stickers. So that the gift bags that were advertised as being worth four times the price of the ticket, and again that was a $65 ticket, that must be one expensive condom.
I was about to say, that must be a magic condom.
Yeah. So after hours and hours of these people being stood out in the sun, a couple of things happened. First off, concerned parents, because again, this is a convention whose guest list was almost entirely YouTubers, so it's a younger audience. This largely teenage and early 20s crowd, their parents started to call concerned about sunburn. And then we know that because people... some of the attendees started getting a little rowdy because they were getting angry. Some of these people had been waiting for 8 hours in the sun, and so some attendees started getting ruly, and so the Marriott staff, who were pretty much hiding at this point in their offices, called the police, and the event was shut down, and the crowd of about 5,000 attendees was dispersed, and the event was canceled partway through the first day. It was supposed to be a Friday-Saturday event. It was canceled halfway through the day on Friday. Holy cow. So here's where even... Now this is just all together a big clusterfuck. Pardon my language. This is already a mess. Here's where some weird stuff starts going out. Good Times Entertainment, the Michael Weiss and Tana Mongo start putting out statements that the reason why it got shut down and the reason why there were so many people outside was that nobody expected 20,000 people to show up when they sold 5,000 tickets. Well, there's a couple of problems here. First, if you look at that crowd, it's clearly not 20,000 people. Secondly, the police, because this 20,000 number hit the press and hit the news, and people kept saying, 20,000 people showed up, and if all these people hadn't shown up, it would have been fine. No. According to the police, the crowd outside and the crowd in the building was about 5,000 people. According to the Garden Grove Police Department, put out a release stating that it was only about 5,000 people out there. So this, for some reason, they created this weird 20,000 people lie because they, it overwhelmed. Now, that really looks like deflection and lying, but here's the amazing thing.
Mm-hmm.
We know, so that's where the story sat for a while, that we knew that, they were weirdly lying about the number of people who showed up. This company really does, Good Times Entertainment doesn't seem to know what they're doing. So since then, and actually, so Shane Dawson, who was supposed to be a guest there, actually released a series of videos going into what happened, and what he pulled out is that, one, the contract they signed at the hotel was for an event of 1,000 people. Not 5,000 people, 1,000. That's what their contract with the hotel is. Secondly, in videos, because Michael Wiest of Good Times Entertainment was trying to make his own documentary about the creation of the event, one would suppose that if this had been a success, it would have been a nice advertising piece for his, you know, business. We have footage in which he tells Tana Mongo, he tells her that, or Mogo, or whatever, I don't know, Tana. I'll call her Tana, because I'm going to start butchering her name the more I say it, because I always get confused. He tells her that the capacity of the hotel is about 1,200, and that they have sold, their cap for ticket sales right now is 5,200. And she is aware of this, of the sales number, and aware of the capacity. So they all knew that everyone involved knew that they had sold over, like, that they were selling 5,000 tickets to an event space that was only capable of holding 1,200. We know that she was aware of it and that he was aware of it. He did suggest dropping the cap to 3,000. From the 5,200, which is still way too high for that space. But she says she rejects the idea of reducing the cap and naively says, you know, people will want to wait in line outside. People want to be oppressed, I believe. Oppressed was her word. You know, like, and be able to brag about how long they waited to get in. And in her defense, I don't think she was thinking that, like, people would be waiting for 8 hours. I think she was thinking, like, people might be waiting an hour or something. You know, and then get in. So I don't think she was, like excited. But the fact is that they knew people were going to be lined up outside. They knew the capacity of the building. Like, this is what gets me. It's like, we have on video acknowledging that before the event, they were well aware that they were overselling this space.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Michael Wiest, I don't know. I know how to spell his name, but I don't know if I'm saying it right. But he is a kid in his early 20s. And to be fair, I started running conventions in my early 20s. You know, I was probably about the same age as this guy when I started running conventions. Mine didn't have this problem because I understand the concept of how big a building is. But he's a kid in his early 20s. He looks like his father and mother are very financially successful. They run an event called Good Times. He's based out of Tennessee. He ran an event called Good Times Live. I know that's in Chicago, which was like a new media event, which is, I believe, how he knew Tana in the first place, because she was a guest at Good Times Live in Chicago last January, which is like a small social media thing. But other than that, like, I can't find any other events that his company has run. He's a young guy. And based on, like, the interview, like, the him talking to Shane Dawson, and based on everything I've seen, he just has no clue what he's doing. He's a rich kid spending mom and dad's money. And
mm-hmm.
he signed some terrible contracts and just did a crappy job. And, like, does not understand the logistics of this industry about event running. It's just ridiculous. But we, like, here's the thing, is we know that they were aware that it wasn't the 20,000 number, so we don't know why they were lying about that. And they were completely aware of the capacity of the building and the number of tickets sold. All parties. And so, like, I look at the space and I'd say I'd cap an event in that space at 1,000. It's just common sense.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, you can't treat this like a concert where, like, people show up, do a thing, and leave. Conventions, people hang out. They stay. So the people in the building, of course, were not wanting to leave the building and go back out into the sun for more people to filter in.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the crib notes on TanaCon. But if you want to know, like, the full sort of details... Shane Dawson's got three videos up about it, and which includes videos from people there. And Philip DeFranco's coverage of it was pretty solid. He's got several episodes of his show that covered. I'll let you guys just, you know, you have the access to the internet, and they're on YouTube. And just if you want to look at that, the pure shit show, it's just...
It's a mess. That's the only way to describe it. It's an absolute mess.
Because it's like, you know, we make fun of DashCon because, like, low attendance and their money problems with things. But I look at DashCon and I don't think anyone's life was in danger. Like, making a bunch of people stand out in the sun for 8 hours and they weren't anticipating it is, like, that's genuinely dangerous. You're risking heat stroke, sunburns we know happen.
Mm-hmm.
We know one young woman was taken to the hospital, although there was no serious injuries. Like, it's... Yeah, so, Michael Weiss, I'm just going to say one thing to you, if on the off chance you ever listen to this, get out of the convention running business. This is not for you.
No kidding.
You are not good at this.
Also, if you're trying to pick what con that you should, you know, hitch your wagon to, maybe not a con driven by someone's ego as a revenge ploy. Just an idea.
Spite cons are usually not good ideas, no.
Spite cons, they're not great. Just a friendly idea from me to you.
Woof.
Yeah. Woof indeed. All right, I think unless you guys have anything else to add, I think it's time we talk about our main topic for this week. It's kind of a weird one, but since it is tomorrow from where we are, but today, if you're listening to it the day it comes out, it is the 4th of July, our country's big anniversary type thing.
It was
so,
the 4th of July. You and I were fireworks. Sorry.
So what better could we do for America's birthday than to talk about how would you make an American Revolution anime? Because that makes sense.
Everything makes sense if you try hard enough.
Okay, but. So, there's this thing I used to watch when I was younger on PBS called Liberty Kids.
Oh, jeez. Oh, jeez.
It's literally a self-insert fanfic of, like, these three kids in the Revolutionary War. They're, like, best friends with Ben Franklin.
Oh, my God. Why Ben Franklin? He's going to corrupt those children.
I know!
Like, the least bad thing he's going to do is teach them what foods to eat to make their urine smell different scents.
It was like he taught them all about like printing press, and it was very educational. But it was still like a legit.
So none of the
like,
stuff included in the collection of his letters called "Fart Proudly."
Yeah, unfortunately.
That's my favorite Ben Franklin quote: "Fart Proudly."
Damn
straight. In our version, that would be included, of course. We want
I like
to stay
it.
Like true to the actual history that happened, not gloss over it.
Going by anime rules, I think it's important to figure out who our main characters are. I don't know if we're allowed to have most of the Founding Fathers be our main characters because, like, well, because they're too old. Too old they are to begin the training. No. Anime protagonists have to be in their teens.
Well, they can be in your version.
That's true. I could change... Well, the first
founding
thing
founding fathers as teens.
Well, but that's the thing. My version, I haven't really thought out much about the war itself. My version starts with when my spouse Rana Innocenti and I were talking about new characters to add to the mobile game Fate Grand Order. So, first we need to bring up who will eventually join the Fate universe as a Saber class servant, George Washington, who will of course have secretly been a woman who was identical to Saber from Fate's Day Night. Just this time in Revolution in Minuteman outfit. Trust me. This is how it's going to roll.
Trusting.
And of course this leads to other supporting characters. I've mostly thought about how we would portray the characters. So we have in our Washington's group of dynasty warrior style freedom fighters, we have the stern but still somewhat likable Thomas Jefferson. We have the more light, free, we have the lighter, more free-spirited, but also very Bishonen and popular with all of our female viewers, Alexander Hamilton. And, of course, last but not least, the wise mentor figure to everyone would be Ben Franklin. And he would teach them martial arts or something. But we wouldn't call it martial arts. It would be something he learned. He would know martial arts because he traveled abroad and he learned actual, like, judo or something. And that's how they'll win the war.
Okay.
Oh, and the opening will feature at least one shot of Cornwallis walking dramatically away from a raging fire behind him that he is unfazed by. Because that's my favorite shot in any anime opening ever.
I think that's going to be in all of our anime openings. Away from
yeah.
Depending on, regardless of our pitch, or the context or the setting. That's, yeah.
That's
even
all
if
I've
Cornwallis
got.
Isn't even sure. in our pitch. So this is my thought. This is my series. This is my big idea. I call it 13 Stars. Set
okay.
in the year of 20XDX.
Yes.
The 13 Stars must defend themselves against the evil empire. The forces, the 13 Stars are, of course, our heroes who are battling against I got to come up with a name for I'll call them the Shining Empire. The Shining Empire. Who, of course, are analogs to the British. All right? And so the 13 Stars...
Or what about Neo Avalon?
Ooh,
yeah.
What about Neo Albion?
Oh, yeah, Neo Albion. That's way better.
Yes.
Yeah.
Neo Albion. Neo Albion and the Shining Empire. That's the bad guys. All right? So the good guys are, of course, led by... There's General George Washington. He's the guy in charge, but our main characters are Lafayette and Hamilton.
Okay.
Because they're our younger, they're both 13.
Okay.
And they fly the what am I going to call this mech? the Potomac. They lead a Potomac squadron, as they fight. And of course, Ben Franklin he's the guy who builds all the stuff and does all the maintenance. And so we get the nice comical storylines of his team trying to, fix the star cannons, because everything's got star in it, of the Potomacs. And then the bad guys, of course. So the bad guys is Dark Emperor George is, of course, the real leader of the bad guys. But in the first couple of seasons, we're just rotating through generals like Braddock and Cornwallis,
Are we going to get a Hessian storyline with Hessian mercenaries to kind of break things up a little bit?
Oh, absolutely. But we're going to so the series, the first season. Cornwallis is our main villain that we see until at the end of the season he's failed and is we we he's not going to Ireland. We just kill him off. And Henry Clinton gets brought in. But Henry Clinton, where we portray on the first season that Cornwallis is the big bad, it's shown throughout the second season and going forward that, like, Henry Clinton, he's just, like, a second-in-command for the big, dark Emperor George. And who is, of course, insane because, you know, he's King George. Yeah, and so... And then we'll throw in some plot, like having to find the Infinity Stars to build the ultimate weapon, the Constitution. I don't know, but...
Oh, and there has to be a... like a romantic subplot with George and Martha.
Well, I don't know. What would we just toss in Betsy Ross? And
could, yeah.
Love triangle between Betsy Ross, Lafayette, and Hamilton.
Ooh, yeah.
Perfect.
I'm all about this.
Yeah, and of course,
I feel like
she's the leader of the Flag Fighters, which are their fighter spacecraft. So she's the hotshot pilot from the Flag Fighters, while the Potomac squads with Lafayette and Hamilton. And so, yeah, no, it's, again, the first season opening is going to have to involve Cornwallis walking away from an explosion.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, it's like a fiery version of one of the Potomacs burning on the ground with Cornwallis walking slowly towards the camera away from it.
Yeah, exactly. The best shot in any anime opening, really.
Yeah, it's... And the opening, of course, has to be a solid J-Rock song, but with the English Stars and Stripes in there somewhere.
Yep.
I feel like this would be... This is making me miss Gonzo Digimation, because this sounds like the kind of insane crap that they would pull. Like, they were the studio that did that weird fantasy version of Romeo and Juliet and that steampunk mecha version of Seven Samurai.
That's exactly what I was thinking about when
version.
I came up with this.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That version is so good, though.
It is. It is one of the most sincere remakes I've ever seen, but...
Those two series were exactly what I was thinking about when I came up with this idea.
This is beautiful. What about you, Gen? Do you have any... like specific ideas for how you would go about turning the American Revolution into a...
I don't know. I really like the whole like chuck it in the future, do
future
past thing.
I need to make 13 stars t-shirts.
Gosh. Well, dude, you can reference it in your comic. That'll be great.
Oh my god. Yeah, no, so it'll go alongside Wage Project and Soldiers of the Sun as my fake anime shows.
I approve strongly.
I like this a lot. I'm just imagining like the young protagonist with like their crazy protagonist hair and then trying to fit the like powdered wigs over and not like succeeding fully, so you could still see like bits of pink or whatever. Yes, good. I
really like that. I think the only other one that I would almost want to play with would be a comedy series from Betsy Ross's perspective that would be a reverse harem anime.
Yes!
With her as the main pro tag. Yeah.
Set
yeah.
in high school.
Uh-huh. And then all of the and then all of the founding fathers are like in an Oran-style host club. It'll be great.
Oh, yes.
Yes, yes, yes. Oh, my God. Yeah, no. Oh, yeah,
so
we definitely
need to do that.
So if
anybody wants to draw fan art of any of our concepts, please
what
do.
What would we call that? Class of 76?
I like that. Class of 76 is a good one.
Rose of Delaware. Revolutionary Boy George. Wait, that's different. That's different.
Oh my god, how would you want, like, oh. Oh. Think of it. Udna, only what they're fighting for is freedom from the British.
Yeah.
George Washington shows up episode one and has to, we replace Sionji with Cornwallis.
Nope.
Toga we replace with Clinton. So, like, that way, because, you know, Sionji's a much bigger, like, important part right at the beginning of Utena, and then he's kind of meh. But it's kind of like Cornwallis.
Oh, man.
I don't know.
My God.
I think I'm...
I knew this would be a fun topic.
I like this. I think this would work.
And, like, season three's the William Howe plot, you know. And then after, you know, just forgotten about in season four. You know, like the Black Rose thing?
Yep.
Yes. Revolutionary sure. Boy George.
I'm loving this. I'm loving this.
If you'd like to make fan art of that using either George Washington or singer Boy George.
Yep. I was thinking, like, the theme song maybe then could be a Boy George song. Or at least in the style of.
Ooh.
But a Japanese version.
Comes and go. You come and go.
Actually, that would be perfect
for
the ending.
Fighting for freedom like 76. The fight with swords, not sticks.
That would be amazing for the ending
fight with
theme.
Swords, not sticks.
But in Japanese, because everything is better when it's... Every American song is better when it's awkwardly translated into Japanese. See again that weird fantasy remake of Romeo and Juliet with its Japanese cover of You Raise Me Up.
Watashi wa nihongo shiranai. Shiranai. No, sorry, that's the best I can do.
You did well. Proud.
I don't understand Japanese. Is what I was saying. For anyone who wants to translate my bad attempts there.
Yeah, I would have said Nihongo Wakarimasen, Wakaranai. Soreda.
I wrote a J-Rock song where all the lyrics translate to I don't speak Japanese. I don't speak Japanese. I don't know what I'm saying. Please help me.
Tasukete. Oh, dear.
And then the chorus is over and over again. I am an idiot. I am an idiot. I am an idiot. And it's all said in really rudimentary Japanese, like in like.
Right, I noticed that because I could actually understand what you were saying,
yeah.
Which. Because
the whole point of the song is that they don't speak Japanese. Oh, it's. I need to re-record that song. I need to record a better version of that song. The version I have up on the internet, it's such a bad recording. Anyways, George Washington.
I will see if I can find, I should really find a way to share it. I should see if I can find, Reyna's design for George Washington's saber, because it was delightful. And I'm legitimately sad that it is not an actual servant in Fate Grand Order.
I don't know.
I don't know how much more we can do with this. I think we got some good laughs out of it.
Yeah, I mean, the only things you could do is, you know, just pitching general things like 13-year-old Japanese high school students accidentally gets transported back in time into the body of George Washington and has to leave the American Revolution. like Quantum Leap, only really messed up.
What's the anime where the girls are boats?
Oh, that's Kantai Collection.
Because you could do that, but set in an earlier period where they're all wooden.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I don't know that they actually establish why it is that all of the girls from Kantai Collection are only World War II era boats. Oh dear. That was a very, 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 very terrible anime with some very creative and cute character designs.
Yeah, you'd have, like, a little sexy schooner.
Dear Lord.
Oh,
I don't even know.
Oh, no.
I started going into this John Paul Jones direction, and I'm like, no. Don't go any further with this,
Reel
Nick.
Reel it back.
It's getting...
All I'm just saying, Revolutionary War, but with wooden mechs.
Okay, but with that'd be really cool.
Right? We can still call them Potomacs.
Oh, yeah. Potomacs are, like, staying, no matter what kind of mechs.
That's, yeah.
Brilliant.
Oh. Firing the star cannons from Independence Hall.
So who does Vic Mignogna get to play?
Jefferson.
You know what? Yeah, I'm in favor.
Yeah, yeah. We'll leave in all the creepy stuff Jefferson did, too.
Oh, dear. I still agree.
You banged. All right. You can't consent when you're someone's slave. That's just all I'm saying.
Oh, dear God.
Moving on.
I think we've covered that topic about as well as we can. I'm comfortable with a short episode if we got good laughs out of it.
I don't know. I want to say to the listeners at home, if you've got a really good idea for a Revolutionary War-inspired anime series, please. Is there some major genre that we didn't think of that you'd want to see covered? Write it in. Go to nerdandtie.com/contact and please just write it in, because we want to hear what your weird, dumb ideas are.
We absolutely want to hear them. Please share them with us so we can share them with the rest of the world.
Yeah, like, was there some, like, genre of anime we didn't think of? Or, like, do you want to even, you know, it doesn't even have to directly be anime. Like, if you want to come up with a, you know, a Founding Fathers-inspired tokusatsu series... I'd love to hear of Independence Rider, and or a Magical Girl series. Like, make things weirder than we made them.
Yeah, gender bend everyone. Please do.
We want to hear what it is. We want to hear your write up a plot. Just give us everything you can. And if you want to do fan art of the 13 Stars or a Revolutionary Boy George, or any of this stuff, please send it to us at tips@nerdandtie.com so we can, like, share it with the world and spread it everywhere, because I think that these are all important ideas that everyone needs to know about.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh,
I agree.
So you got two letters in the mailbag.
And now let's see what we got.
They're both from Keith Shizuo.
Oh.
He wrote in two emails since our last episode. So.
All right. So I will take the first one. All right. Our first one is from Keith Shizuo with the subject Unavailable in Australia.
That's how I knew he was from Australia.
Hi, Nerd and Ty. I just thought I'd put my thoughts up on things not available in my home country in response to your last episode. Firstly, candy. You guys got Reptar bars last year, which are candy bars from the Nickelodeon show Rugrats. I was a big fan as a kid, but it's impossible for me to get one without paying at least $10 Australian each and waiting a month for them to be shipped to me, probably melted.
Okay.
Lame.
I've never encountered this.
I didn't know they made real ones. Like, I know what they, like, I know what Reptar is from Rugrats, and
right.
I'm looking.
I didn't know someone made a real world Reptar bar.
I didn't know we had those.
Maybe this is something else Canada's been keeping secret from us. Anyway, secondly, video game art. PAL region players have been shafted for decades with poor quality printings on video game discs and manuals. Discs adorned with vibrant colors in the U.S. Scraped by with often only one over here, and manuals that are often black and white as opposed to full-color American counterparts, such as the PS1 and PS2 being the worst offenders.
We're
back on the Reptar bars.
Where the PAL regions really get shafted with video games is pretty much the entire 16-bit and 18-bit era. 18-bit, 8-bit
mm-hmm.
era. Because PAL is at 50 hertz and not 60 hertz, the PAL stuff is all like they're at 50 hertz. They slow down the clock speeds of everything to make it work with the televisions. And so like Sonic the Hedgehog is slower on PAL versions of the game than he is in American versions of the game. And so video games from the 16-bit era literally run faster if they're the NTSC versions.
Crazy. I did not know that.
Yeah. So, like, some games tried to adjust for speed, but for the most part, like, if you pick up a Genesis game from the PAL era and you got the PAL versus NTSC, the NTSC version is going to run faster.
Again, did you say you found progress on this Reptar question?
Yes, I looked up Reptar bars, and they are a real thing.
Oh, my God. Did not know that.
They're frosting-filled milk chocolate bars. They come in green frosting and purple frosting, and they turn your tongue their respective colors.
I need these
in my life.
I might need to look this up. We might have a side quest during our Anime Iowa trip.
It looks like the purple ones are a bit more rare and therefore more expensive at $8, whereas the green ones are $5.
Huh. Crazy.
Right?
All right. The rest of the letter we have here.
The Thomas the Tank Engine bit.
Thomas the Tank Engine. In Australia, we got the British version of Thomas, which was just the 5-minute episode format. In the U.S., you got a whole half-hour TV show, Shining Time Station, themed around Thomas, and had a storyteller appear with live-action TV segments. I remember this, and
Mr.
I grew
Conductor,
up with it.
Yeah, it was first it was Ringo Starr, then it was George Carlin. And then it was Alec Baldwin, I think, took over eventually at one point for Mr. Conductor.
And the girl's name was Casey Jones.
Yeah.
I better watch your speed anyway.
No, I used to watch Shining Time Station. That show was a trip.
I loved Shining Time Station as a child. I absolutely loved it. When they brought Thomas the Tank Engine over to Japan, things got crazy. Japanese episodes had individual voice actors for every single character that stayed in the show from 1990 to 2004. And the cast that replaced them in 2005 is mostly intact to this day.
Jesus.
That's nuts.
Wow.
I love that. That's insane. On top of that, there's theme parks, candy, exclusive episodes, video games, and full-fledged train sets and model railway systems. You can imagine just doing a Google image search of Japanese Thomas the Tank Engine toys will damn well bring a tear to your eye. Yeah, I'm 21. What of that? There's nothing wrong with that, Keith. There is nothing wrong with that. If it's a cool toy, be moved by it. Also, Japan is getting Blu-ray releases of Red Dwarf, and we aren't. Even though the original show was filed on videotape, not film, it still would have been cool. Anyway, keep on Spockin' and whatnot. Thanks, Keith. Part one.
All right, Gen, you want to take part two?
Yeah, one second. All right. Dear nerds and your haberdashery. Just thought I'd throw in my two cents when it comes to bad dads in fiction. First of all, almost all of the dads in BoJack Horseman, with one
plus eight
exceptions in that show. If it's a dad, it's a bad dad. My favorite being the dad who thought that BoJack's potential inappropriate interest in his son could be his big break, especially if it turned out to be inappropriate, and BoJack's grandfather, who got his wife lobotomized.
Yeah, that was pretty messed up.
As someone who's never seen the show.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
God. You've never... Oh, my God. You need to sit down and watch BoJack.
BoJack is one of my favorite TV shows, but it is... I have to be in the right mood for it because it is so
unpleasant. It is an exploration of depression.
Uh-huh.
I'll watch it after I finish Glow. Secondly...
Alison Brie's in both of those.
Awesome. I'm going to keep reading.
Sorry.
Secondly, Red Dwarf. All three dwarfers who have dads have bad dads. First, there was Katz, who ate his own feet. Enough said. Then there was Rimmers, who starved his kids if they got astro-navigation questions wrong and put them on a stretching rack every day to ensure they were regulation height for the Space Corps. And in season 10, have you seen it yet? He made Rimmer a guinea pig for a social experiment in his own high school class. But I shan't say any more about that episode because it might spoil someone if they haven't seen it. Then there's Lister. Ooh, boy. First of all, Lister knocked himself up while drunk twice, shrugging it off by saying it's the man's responsibility to use protection because it's the man who gets pregnant. Then after having twins, he names them Jim and Bexley after his favorite zero-G football player, Jim Bexley Speed. Then he has another son with his mother who he abandons under a pool table over 3 million years.
Because his dad didn't say... But it's to be fair, he's abandoning himself. Like, the kitty... So Jim and Bexley get shunted off to because they prematurely were aging too fast in our reality. He sent them to live with his mother, which was also his own alternate universe counterpart, which... That was pretty messed up. Like...
Uh-huh.
But his third child, you know, the ones that weren't... All of his children are genetically identical to him. I just want to point out. because his first two kids are... with an alternate universe version of himself, where the only difference is the second X chromosome. And then his third kid is himself. Because he and Kachansky gives birth to him. And he drops himself off in a box. Now, while Lister is his own biological father, and he does drop him off, Lister... I wouldn't consider him to be really Lister to be his own dad. He's his own biological father, but he was raised by a man with the last, you know, David Lister's father was the man who found him and raised him and took in this kid off, you know, that he found in a box under a zero-G pool table. So, I mean, I'm just saying there's one good dad in the entirety of Red Dwarf.
And it's more reflecting on the definition of father.
Well, and also, Lister knew he was holding himself. Like, what do you do? If you're holding your past self, you're going to make sure that your life still happens. Mm. Right?
Yeah. Point taken.
Probably finish reading the letter.
Also, I can't remember if you said it in the last episode, but Goku and Vegeta are terrible dads. True.
Should have said it.
Very true. Very extremely true.
My significant other has things to say about that.
If Goku's so great, why is he dead all the time? That is a quote. I did not make up that line.
Yeah, no, I'll tell him. But Keith brings up also Fiona's dad from Shrek. He locked her in a dragon guarded tower for like 10 years.
Well, you know, after all the Shrek talking that I did, I can't believe we didn't bring that up. Yeah, King Harold is awful.
Yeah. To be fair, he's
Why
a frog.
Do I know that character's name?
The Shrekening has begun.
The Shrekening?
Yeah. I just came up with that.
The Shrekening.
Use it, spread it. The Shrekening.
Hey now, you're an all-star. Get your game on. Go play. Can you make a... Hey now, all-star. I don't have a good way to make that sound ominous. You can't make Smash Mouth sound ominous.
You know, it already sounds ominous on its own if you're Smash Mouth's career.
Somebody once told me the world was going to roll me.
Just like slap that in a music program and like just change it to a minor key.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
There's actually, I think Shmo Yoho did a recording of the first verse in a minor key.
Excellent.
I should listen to that because it's amazing.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that is the end of the letter from Keith Shizuo.
Yep.
All right. Thanks for writing in, Keith. Remember, if you want to write us something, do it, man. If you disagree.
Oh. And Keith, don't feel bad about the candy. We do not have Tim Tams or Lamington or Milo. I'm really upset about the Milo.
Our Cadbury cream eggs taste different and are a slightly different size. Yeah.
So you have awesome candy and I'm really jealous.
And And the thing they sell as Kinder eggs here is garbage.
Yeah.
Also true.
Like, it's the most disgusting candy I've ever had. Don't ever buy them. It's time to move on to the final part of our episode, and that is the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge. You guys excited?
Yeah.
I'm excited. All right, so, the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge is where I read part of a book, and the challenge to you, the audience, is to guess what book I'm reading from. If you guess correctly, you get included in the Hall of Awesome. The benefits of the Hall of Awesome are as follows. 1, we put your name on our website. 2, we read your name on every episode. And 3, that lizard that's been hiding in your closet and plotting to kill you will instead decide to move to your neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
So, the current members of the Hall of Awesome are as follows. Arkhamite, Zero, Rin, Incendi, Cheese McDamery, Krista, Slitherity, Shameless Otaku, The Random Ramblings Man, Corfan, Capito, Chris Graham, Lily Soares, Paper Godzilla, Cavsey, The Minnesota Librarian, Sean Orange, Keith Shizuo, and Sakura Sunset. And now, I will open up the book that I've been reading for the last several episodes and pick a random page. Oh. The Piercing of Her Mind by a Machine. Be like it shall some length of time yet be, until we can extract the thoughts therein. If you know a book I'm reading, go to nerdandtech.com/contact and fill out the form and tell us. Or if you'd like to tell us anything else, if you'd like to, you know, tell us your favorite anime series involving someone named Steven. If you'd like to pitch us your idea for anything. And again, go with a big topic. Pitching us your revolutionary show, war show, will give you high fives and much kudos. So please write in. Let us know. If you think we're wrong about anything, if you want to express your thoughts on any of the news topics and the headlines, please make sure you go to nerdandtie.com/contact. Or if you want to like have your voice heard on the show, like a couple others have, you can also leave us a voicemail at area code 414-375-0480 and say something there. And if we've got time to fit it on the show, we will play it. Like, and you can hear yourself coming through your headphones. Like a message from yourself to you in the future, from the past. It's a dream.
Time to
well.
Easy and cheap on Nerd and Tie.
We're good at some things, and that is one of them.
Potomac.
I hate everything about that. We need it to happen. Oh my
seriously, if you draw us fan art of it, we will put it like on all of our, we'll put it up on the main site, on our social media, like, seriously.
For reals.
Reals.
If it's good enough, it'll be our Facebook cover image.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Outro us, young.
All right. All right. Well, this Fortnite was lots of fun, but I think we're going to call it a night. So as always, I'm Nick Izumi.
I'm Trey Doran.
And I'm the Genjamin.
And remember, you can always... What?
I was going to say, Trey, tell them where they can find us on social media.
Remember, you can find us on social media at Twitter. At Twitter, we're at Nerd and Tie, on Facebook /Nerd and Tie. Tumblr is nerdandtie.tumblr.com. Remember, you can always support the show financially, either by directly contributing as a sponsor at nerdandtie.com, clicking on the sponsor information, contributing to our legal fund at gofundme.com/nerdandtie, or contributing to us all individually, where I have a Patreon at patreon.com/TRAEGORN. Nick has a Patreon at patreon.com/NickIzumi. And Gen has a Ko-fi link at Ko-fi/Genjamin. And remember to follow us on iTunes. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, on Google Play, on Stitcher, and I believe we're on Podbean. Where anywhere where good podcasts are served, you can also punch in that RSS feed that we offer on our website into any podcatcher, and make sure that we're in your ears every fortnight, because this is a fortnightly show. Every 2 weeks, man. It's magical.
And remember to keep on spocking in the free world.
You know what's also magical? This burrito Eric made for me.
Ooh, burrito.
Burritos are good.
I had bratwursts for dinner. Bratwursts are delicious. You know, it's like you can get those microwavable Johnsonvilles, and it's just like so convenient for like if you just want to toss something in the microwave for 45 seconds and like have some nice hot sausage in your mouth. It's delicious.
You know what?
For a stripe of mustard down the middle.
God damn it, Trey.
I don't know. I think it's important.